Hey there, this is Seth Waters from Channel 9, coming to you from Microsoft Building 17. We're talking about Cortana Intelligence Suite and some of the stuff in the gallery. I have a special guest. Why don't you introduce yourself?
So my name is Raj Ekpal. I am the CEO and Chief Data Scientist for Data Science Dojo. So Data Science Dojo is essentially a data science education startup, mm-hmm. like many of the startups that are out there. But we are not really a Me Too product. We are somewhat different from the way other boot camps and other training companies they are handling the training.
So what sets you apart from someone else, let's say?
So primarily, our training is only a week long.
Okay.
And that is the difference. And one might ask, if others are doing it in 12 weeks, I mean, how can you do it in a week? But it is very rigorous, 10 hours a day for 5 days training, and we expect people to actually come in with some pre-work that we assign them.
Mm-hmm.
The other difference really is that we are not looking for math and physics and astronomy PhDs or master's students.
Sure.
We actually think that data science is for everyone. That's our slogan as well. And what we think is that data science is going to be, maybe a few years down the road, it is going to be another skill like programming and word processing, that the tools are becoming more commoditized.
Sure.
Azure ML, drag and drop, bring in modules, HD Insight, create a Hadoop cluster within a few clicks. So I think we are moving to this space. I mean, think about assembly language. When people started programming,
sure.
they would program in very low-level machine learning,
machine language. Yeah.
And we now are in JavaScript and Python era where programming is easy. So I think the data science tools are evolving in a way that it is going to be interesting. Let me put it this way.
Awesome.
And we have had actually. People from various domains. We have had a medical doctor attend our training. And
oh, wow. Yeah. So what is the most important thing for your students to do while they're there learning about data science?
But what is the most important
thing? Yeah, as your students are there, what are they going to be doing? What is the most important thing for them?
We start with the whole, our approach is taking this a bigger bird's eye mm-hmm. view. And taking deep dives as needed.
Mm-hmm.
So we will start with, first of all, we make sure that before they come to our trainings, we'll make sure that they have the necessary tools. So we will have instructional videos on Azure ML before they come in.
Okay.
We'll have instructional videos on fundamentals of data mining. So they should know actually what a feature is and what is supervised learning and what is regression, what is classification, at least at high level. I mean,
sure,
what does it even mean to do that? And we'll teach them R before they come in. So we'll make sure once they come in, we really literally they hit the ground running. So we start with the idea of data exploration, visualization, feature engineering. So we spend quite a bit of time on that, just ensuring that best practice is that you don't start building predictive models right away. You start with understanding your data before you start building predictive models.
I see.
And then we move to classification. We start with classification. Then we move to regression, and gradually start building up. And really we build that flow. Instead of covering too many techniques, like 10 different algorithms for classification, 10 different algorithms for regression, what we do is we focus on best practices.
I see.
So regardless of whether you're using a neural network or you are using a support vector machine or you're using a decision tree, there are certain best practices that you must follow
sure.
in order to build a good predictive model. So we emphasize on those practices as opposed to teaching them a lot of learning algorithms. And in the end, many people, they would attend a semester-long course in mm-hmm. machine learning. And when you ask them to build something useful, they don't have that ability.
I see.
We focus on the enabling them. And we have seen phenomenal results. People would go back and within a week or 2 weeks or a month, they would tell us that they have actually started building predictive models and doing data science, practical data science.
That's awesome. You mentioned building something useful. Is mm-hmm. that something that you focus on while they're in class?
Yes. So we are, once again, what makes us different is we have a selected group of instructors who can actually conduct end-to-end training. So it is not like somebody teaching day one, half of day one, and somebody teaching half of day two.
I see.
So everybody knows everything. So everybody understands the bigger picture. So if we are teaching them, say, cross-validation, for instance, we know why cross-validation is being taught.
Sure.
And if we tell them what is a hypothesis test and what is an A-B test, we actually have a bigger picture. I mean, it's not some theoretical topic. It is actually, it is a continuation of, you're connecting dots throughout. So that's the overall idea. So that's the approach that we take.
That's awesome. And not only that, it seems like you've actually included some of the work that you've done into the Cortana Intelligence Gallery as a start. And we've been talking about data science and Cortana Intelligence Gallery, so we're glad to have you. So why don't you tell us a little about what we're going to look at today, sort of as an example of some of the things that they might learn.
Okay. So let's go to the gallery. So I have already have some of the experiments that we shipped preloaded here. So I am going to go ahead.
Before you go there, it looks like you have more than one experiment. Are all of the experiments that you might do in class mm-hmm. also available on the Cortana Intelligence Gallery?
Yes. So the idea is that the Cortana Gallery, it makes sharing of machine learning experiments. The whole workflow of a machine learning, building a machine learning model or multiple machine learning models. So Cortana actually makes it super easy. As I said, I mean, we have limited time.
Sure.
We have only 50 hours, and we want to focus as much as possible on best practices and theoretical understanding and the underpinnings of the best practices. And we do not want to actually waste time on just building the experiment from scratch.
Sure.
They do it. We make them build some experiments. But after a while, I mean, they know how to build an experiment. So we have these shareable experiments that they would use and really clone and just get started as quickly as possible.
And so you just put this on the Cortana Intelligence Gallery, they mm-hmm. click on it, and it just pops it up.
Yes. It's fairly easy to actually do it. I mean, you click on it, you click on any of the experiments. So let's go to this building a regression model to predict real estate sales price, right? So. We were actually spending quite a bit of time on making people build this from scratch. And at the end of the day, we realized that because of the limited time that we have for the regression module that
sure.
we cover, we would rather spend more time on, we teach them regularization. We talk about L1 penalty and L2 penalty, and we talk about cross-validation and mean squared error. So let's actually have this pre-built and let them clone it, walk them through the workflow, and show them what matters. Because no matter what toolkit they use for building a regression model, those things will remain the same. Even if they build a model in R, they should actually understand what RMSE is, what MSE is, what does a good model look like, and how can you fix model. And fixing a model, in a more machine learning lingo, it's called tuning
uh-huh.
the model. It's that understanding is not very common.
No.
Not many people actually. So generally, the idea is take the data, throw it at that
and then hope
library,
for the best.
And hope for the best, right? So and we actually emphasize on those things that tools are easy, really. If anybody who has used R or Azure ML or any other toolkit for that matter, right? So I mean, so these tools are becoming more and more sophisticated. And the idea is actually to have that solid understanding in theory so you can build a good, solid, robust model.
All right, well, let's get a taste for this this experiment that you've done and then get a taste for how you go about explaining okay. these things.
Okay, so I already have this experiment cloned mm-hmm. In my workspace here. So this is, let me show actually the overall experiment here. So this is what the overall workflow looks like. We'll start here, go all the way down. So this is what the overall workflow looks like.
Okay.
What we will start with at the top is, So let's look at this. So this is the data source that we're using. So this is a data set that involves some sales prices for some homes. And we'll visualize the data. It's a big data set, so it will the preview is going to take a few seconds to generate.
While that's loading, my guess is that it's a big table of a lot of features mm-hmm. and then what the price is.
Yes. For those who don't who are absolute beginners, because I think the audience may have some people who don't know anything about machine learning. So think about features as if you have to find out what distinguishes what will make the price of a house different from one house to another. Mm-hmm. It could be the size of the home. It could be the school district.
It could be location,
or maybe some other interesting features might be is that what was the median sale price near mm-hmm. in the neighborhood? What another interesting feature might be that possibly if there was a foreclosure nearby or not, right? So tons of features are possible, and this is for those of you who have seen Zillow or mm-hmm. Redfin, that's what they do, and you can do it. I mean, so I can assure you can do it.
All right. So there's the data.
Okay. So if you look at this, the first column here is ID. It's think of that as a primary key. What is the house ID? And then you have a bunch of features related to zoning and what kind of street is it? Is it paved or not? Lot shape, utilities, and now we can keep going. And you're remodeled, right? So. And you're built, right? So, and then you have tons of features. You can see that many of them you can probably guess from the name, and sometimes you may not be able to guess. And that's your job as a data scientist or someone who's analyzing this data is to actually get that understanding of the domain and figure out how to get this information, whether
awesome.
This feature is meaningful or not. And you can see there is a feature. I think this one is obvious, heating, whether there is heating or not. And you can see there are five distinct values for heating. Let's see what they are.
Something.
Something, right?
That's right.
Some values there. And if you go all the way down, full bath, half bath, bedroom, and you can see that this is a huge data set in the end. There is this the sales price. So the goal of a predictive model in general is that you have to make a prediction, and prediction not based on astrology or anything, right?
So it's the bones, right?
Yeah. No crystal ball, really, right? So no crystal ball here, right? So what you have to do is really predict based on historical data set. You know that there's what kind of relationship exists between all the variables that we looked at them. I mean, you may call them predictors, you may call them features, you may call them variables or
sure.
columns, and different names. And you have to predict this thing called the sales price, okay? And if you look at this, the sales price, I can quickly get a box plot. And box plot actually gives me an idea, quickly some sort of summary of what's the range of prices in this house, and you can see that some of the houses are too expensive, and then Azure machine learning, it actually gives me a very quick idea of what are the outliers in this data set.
That's awesome.
So
we really haven't done anything other than inspect and
yes.
look at the data.
Yes, and this is actually for an end-to-end data science, when you're building a predictive model or an end-to-end data science process, you start with actually looking at your data,
yeah.
eyeballing your data, cleaning your data, massaging it, extracting new features. We call it feature engineering, right? So you would just create maybe LDL, and you have some health-related condition, LDL and HDL.
Sure.
They themselves might not be good features, but you might LDL to HDL ratio
right.
might be a good feature, right? So you will do a lot of it, and you will spend much more time than what I'm
of course,
doing it, right?
Of course.
So just to make sure that it's not... you would not rush to actually building a model like this. But this is already created. And after that, we did some analysis on what are some of the low quality features, and we've dropped them. And the reason for dropping some features is that you have limited computational resources, right? So this is a small data set. But from a practice standpoint, you're not going to keep a lot of features because they will take your compute time. We are working on megabyte scale right now. But what if you are at terabyte scale? Any additional columns will actually increase your compute time and delay your execution of your machine learning algorithm.
Is it also true that some of the features are not discriminative of the actual target anyways?
Yeah. For instance, the first column.
ID.
ID, right?
So, one through whatever.
Unless you have the same houses in your test set as well in the future, right? You can memorize it.
Then it's not really a key, okay?
Okay. So then basically the next module is showing us how to some casting. We are converting all the strings to make them to categorical variables. So again, a string is something that can take any value, right?
Sure.
And when we cast something as categorical, what that means is that it can only take those distinct values that have, right? So this is some cleanup or some pre-processing of data that is, I would call it best practices that that you have to go through. Okay. And similarly, we would also look at some string or some categories which look like integers. For instance, if we have some data related to passengers, right? Mm-hmm. So, and if I see 1, 2, and 3, should I treat them as categories or integers, mm-hmm. right? So, and we will convert them to integers if needed, right? So it depends upon it. It's based on the context, which is probably beyond the scope of discussion right now. Then you'll also clean missing data. You will actually, sometimes you would have missing data in your data set. Mm-hmm. So this module, if you look at this is cleaning missing data. And the nice thing about, for those of you who have cleaned data in a programming language, you probably know how painful it is, right? So unless you're using some custom library, still you have to write lines of code. Over here, all we did was, in any of the categories, if there are any missing values, go and replace them with the mode. And I'm not really advocating that mode should be the best option. You can, if there's not many, you can remove the entire row. You can use a custom substitution value. Maybe you can say all the missing values are unknown,
as a category.
Yeah, unknown as a category. So you are basically adding an additional category called unknown to your data set, right?
Which may or may not work, and that's okay.
Which may or may not work, right? And that's where your understanding of the domain will come in.
Sure.
Does missing mean it is missing? Or does missing mean it was unknown?
Jerry forgot to put it in the text box.
Yes.
I mean, it could be that.
Yeah, Jerry forgot to put
Jerry,
it.
Jerry, come on.
Yeah. And we have Jerry's in every company.
Oh, I know. Jerry's are everywhere. They're everywhere.
Yeah. Okay. So, and then we also have to clean missing data in our numeric data set, right? Mm-hmm. And in this case, again, this is just to show what is possible. We are replacing the numeric data, mm-hmm. Missing numeric data with mean. There is other techniques that we can use, right? So we can replace with median. We can replace with mice, mice, not those mice. Some sort of inline regression, right? So based on historical data, if you know that that certain values based on certain columns were like this. So basically building a machine learning model
for features.
For features, right? Sorry. So you're basically filling in missing values using a simple machine learning model.
Cool.
So, and this is, if we replace it with mice, this would be an interesting example actually to, and for those of you who plan to clone this, you should actually look at this.
It turns out that mean is also a machine learning algorithm because it predicts what you might get.
Yeah, a mean is actually, technically, it is a machine learning algorithm. It
just saying.
It will have a lot of error.
Yes,
right?
You might as well flip a coin, but still.
Sure. And then after that, this module, this is actually selecting only the best features. I think it depends upon your context, right? So if you don't want to deal with a lot of data and you want to reduce there is a concept, of course, of dimensionality, right?
Sure.
So you don't want to use too many features, right? Because there are some problems that may happen when you have too many features, right? So in other cases, yeah, I mean, if you want to, if you think that you can handle those weaker features and you can keep your model in control, you may want to keep them, right? So for illustration purposes, because in this case we are really, we have this for beginners, not quite beginners because this is still complex, but we want to give people an idea what is possible. And so we show that, okay, you can reduce it and then get the a reduced subset of features out, and then you, as you can see here, this gives you the filtered data set. It removes the features that don't have any predictive value using Pearson correlation, and then you can actually use a few other methods of establishing this feature importance. So we'll start here now. So we have using the this Pearson correlation, we obtained a subset of features that are likely the best features that we can have.
Okay.
And now we started with, since this is a, we are predicting a number, so this is a regression problem.
Right.
Okay. And what we are starting with the simplest and most basic regression algorithm, which is linear regression, right? So, and the way you can build this, for those of you who are using Azure ML the first time, you will go in the search box and you will search for linear regression, right? So you will bring in the linear regression module here. And now this linear regression module, it gives you an option of how you want to, whether you want, there are, one is an algebraic technique, other is more numerical technique. So you are actually choosing between the two, and both have their, there are reasons to choose one of them, okay? And if I go and choose, for instance, the online gradient descent, it gives me this option of whether I want to explore a parameter range, or if I or whether I want to test out a single parameter. And what parameters are is this: what is my learning rate? Do I want to take bigger steps when I'm converging to the solution, or do I want to take smaller steps when I'm converging to the solution? Right. So, if I change it to 0.2, for instance, it will take twice as much as big of step.
But you could overshoot.
Yes,
the
you could overshoot, right? So you
bad.
Can before you hit the minima, you can actually land on the other side, and if you make it too big, you may never converge, right? So there are some reasons, and you will actually figure out it shouldn't be too big, and it shouldn't be too small, because if you make it too small, it has its own problems, right? So you
takes
will,
too long.
It
to
takes
converge.
Too long to converge, right? And then we are talking about number of training epochs, and I would like to actually talk about this one. This is your, this is the regularization weight. And regularization is, think of it as, well, a regulatory authority, right? So it basically keeps your model under control. You don't want a very complex model. And what I mean is that if I have a regression model, and I wish I had some way to actually draw something here, but
we do.
Okay. So I have assumed that I have these points, right? And I am trying to find a regression line that fits these points the best. And let me go back and so this is my
X and Y, yeah.
X and Y, okay? Okay, and I'm trying to predict, come up with a function of X based on, if I want to come up with a mathematical relationship, what would be Y for a given value of X, right? So I can come up with this. This may approximate, and this may approximate, right?
Right.
And someone might say, well, let's do this. Come up with a function like this. Yeah, it looks good. No error, right? But what this will do is, we are almost memorizing. And we are trying to actually, instead of learning, we are memorizing.
Right.
So what regularization does is, it actually discourages that behavior. If you have more weight, it actually would force the function to have something that's simple and not have a lot of variation in your function.
Got it.
Okay.
So it's just to prevent overfitting.
To prevent overfitting, yes. So and that's so these are the default settings. And we started with if we start with the default settings and cross-validate, and cross-validation, you can look at it this way. So when we, no matter what predictive model it is, whether it's a classification model or a regression model, right? You would cross-validate, and the idea is that you will throw different variations of the data, build a model, and test on a variation of data. Then you come up with another variation of the data and throw it at, and do it 10 times. And then make sure that if the model performance is fluctuating a lot, that may be an indicator of that your model is not stable. The setting that you came up with for this machine learning algorithm, it's not stable.
I see.
So, and here is it. If I look at this, for instance, we have this setting. The learning rate is 0.1, and then training grounds and regularization weight. So we started with 0.01. And when we ran this, this is what our cross-validation results look like. And for those of you who have done cross-validation in any other programming language, I think you would highly, highly appreciate this cross-validation module here. So if you look at this, we by default, we have tenfold cross-validation. It tells me that when fold number 1 through 9 were used for training and fold number 0 was used for testing, the mean absolute error was 151,534. So what that means is that for a house that is worth 200,000,
we were only off
my 151,000 actually.
Oh, 151.
Yeah, 151,000.
Oh
right?
Man, yeah.
So that's that already tells me that at least it did not do well on this fold. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to the next one. 123,000, 135,000, and if I go all the way, I have 124,900, so 125,000 average error there. And we also get the standard deviation. So you can think of this that roughly on average, I will get an error about 125,000 above or below.
Right.
Right? So clearly, cross-validation shows me that this setting is not good.
Yeah.
Right? And we have a standard deviation of 11,700 or so. Okay. So what we decided was that we are going to decrease the regularization weight, right? So the model has a lot of error. What that indicates, what that implies is that if the model has a lot of error, maybe the model did not do a good job.
We over-regularized, perhaps?
Yes, we over-regularized, yes. So the model did not do a good job, and maybe instead of, so perhaps if I go back and refer to this, maybe this, the model that I'm looking at, let me bring in my, so maybe this is not a good model, and this is a bad model, but maybe we can find some middle ground between the two, right? So so we do not want to, so we do since we do not want it to be regularized too much, we will just reduce the penalty on complexity, and we'll let it be a little more complex, and see how that turns out. Right. So it's really so what happens is most people they would think of machine learning
as a magic black box. It's not a magic bullet.
Yeah, it is not a magic bullet. I mean, so very often people would say, yeah, we thought it is machine learning, right? Yeah, I mean, this is machine learning. It is hard work.
Data science, and science, as you all know, is glorified guess and check. That's the scientific method, right?
Yeah, it is a scientific method.
We have a guess,
right?
And we check.
Yes.
We had a first guess, it was wrong, and we checked. Now we're going to the second guess.
Yeah. So we reduce the weight. That means that we are more relaxed about it, right? Mm-hmm. So we will let the model be a little more complex. Mm-hmm. And let's see how that turned out, right? So we allowed it to be a little more complex, and I will go back and visualize the results, and I will all the way go directly to the bottom here. And yes, we were actually able to. The error
by
now
half
is
now.
Yeah, more than half.
More than half,
one
by,
third,
by
right?
Third,
so
yeah.
To one third, right? So 42,000, and then even the standard deviation.
It's
actually, so even the error that we are getting that is has less of fluctuation. Mm-hmm. We can actually be confident that our error is going to be within certain bound. So in a
usually
in a
three standard deviations for the mean covers almost
yes.
everything. And mm-hmm. so if one standard deviation is only that much, that means you're pretty good.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
And then let's keep going, right? So we'll not give up because
we want to do better.
Yeah, we want to do better.
Want to
right?
do better.
So,
let's do it.
Let's go there. And let's see. And now I said, okay, let's let it run for more training rounds. Maybe, so there's this technique that is called gradient descent. Mm-hmm. So you start from the top and then keep going until you hit that minima, right? So maybe you stop too early.
Yep.
You still got a good function, good model, but it was not as good.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if we run it for more rounds, it might help us. So this is the third one. We let it run for more rounds. And yeah, we did get from 42,000, I believe that was there. We went down to 36, and then we reduced the standard deviation.
Okay.
Even further. So that means that actually, so to almost, I mean, when we are in a course, I say, I mean, you build models by thinking, not by doing, right?
Sure.
So it's almost you're visualizing, right? So yeah, I mean, now I know that it stopped somewhere before that minima, right? And then this setting, the fourth setting would be combining both.
I see.
So more rounds and a lower regularization right. rate. So,
and looks like the learning rate is a little bit different this time too.
Learning rate is, learning rate is a little faster.
Yeah.
It will converge a bit faster because now I think it's a trade-off. If you look at this, so if we have more training rounds, this is the maximum number of training
right.
rounds. So we want it to converge faster.
Right?
So that's the thinking there. And if you right-click and visualize, and go all the way, and we get some improvement in standard deviation. Let me go back and see. This is 36,600 and 34,000, and this is
's a little bit
less of standard deviation, so your model is somewhat a little more stable.
It's a little tighter. Yeah,
yeah it's your bound is a bit tighter, but still your model performance is about the same. So we did get an improvement. So now the next question to ask is, okay, so what do we do with this? This is cross-validation, and we thought that we are building a single machine learning model, and we have.
Like
actually,
four
we have we have 10
yeah,
of them, right?
Yeah.
So it's a tenfold cross validation.
Oh,
so
that's right.
So which machine learning model do we
It's a good question.
Ship, right? And again, not so much of a common understanding. The goal of machine learning is really to really find the best set of parameters, right? So what we did here is we were not finding the best model. We were finding the best set of parameters that would actually handle all the uncertainties in this data.
Mm-hmm.
And now we found out that this fourth setting is perhaps the best setting.
Mm-hmm.
And what we can be confident, we can say that now we will take all of our data and train a model using this setting. And that model is
the one we ship.
Yeah, and we know statistically, no matter what variation of this data was trained with this setting, it was the best one.
Right.
So that's the idea, and then after we once we have this model, Azure ML actually provides some very seamless few click deployment steps. So you can actually, if you are planning to launch your own housing price prediction company, I mean, this is it, right? So you can actually go and deploy predictive model and as a service. And as they say, data is the new oil. If you have the data, you can actually build a predictive model like this and deploy it and start using that as a service.
Right? And this is awesome because you put it on the Cortana Intelligence Gallery, and so now we can download this, we can look at this, mm-hmm. and remember that this model might work for a couple of weeks. But yes. what happens after a month of this? You get more data, you need to make retune your model. Sure. It's always sort of a thing you always do.
It is an ongoing, right? So if it is a problem where, so most real world business cases, they are going to be like this, right?
Yep.
If you're a major online retailer, right? So you have new product categories or new customers coming in. If you are an online movie recommender, right? So you will have new genres of movies being added, right? So it is going to be an ongoing struggle. And if you are building a spam classifier, it's even harder, right? So there's someone actually trying to actively defeat, right? So you build a model, they figure out what you figured out, and they do exactly the opposite to actually defeat you. So so it depends upon what domain it is. Housing, we all know, we live in Seattle. So we have seen some interesting fluctuations here. In housing market, you will have to keep the model updated.
Well, this is awesome. I love that you put it in the Cortana Intelligence Gallery, and we saw there was tons of other experiments. Where can people go to find out more about what they can learn at your Data Science Dojo?
Where they can go to what they can learn, right?
Yeah, so just like a website or something?
Mm-hmm. Yes, so you can actually, if you are interested, you can go to datasciencedojo.com/bootcamp. And this site actually covers all of the topics that we cover, what's the approach, and also, we have trained actually more than 2,000 people already.
Oh, fantastic. Right? So,
and any company that you have heard of, mm-hmm. any major company, more than 230 companies now.
That's right? Awesome. And where can they go to find the Data Science Dojo in the Intelligence Gallery? Uh-huh. Where can they find all the experiments you put up?
Okay, so you will have to go and search, Data Science Dojo. And we have a bunch of different experiments.
That's awesome.
Okay, and we will continue to add things here. It's not just our business. I mean, it's passion as well. So
fantastic.
We will just keep bringing in interesting stuff that is not just for the audience that the people who attended mm-hmm. our trainings, but for general population.
And even if they have attended the training and they might have forgotten, they can always go back
yes.
and look at these experiments, mm-hmm. or you can too, which is why I think the Cortana Intelligence Gallery is awesome, because we get to see
yep.
real life experiments. Thanks so much for spending some time
Thank
with
you.
Us. Thanks so much for watching. We've been learning about the Cortana Intelligence Gallery and the Data Science Dojo and what you can learn there. Thanks so much for watching. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9. We'll see you next time.